Well, hey there, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. Sorry I missed the last one, but I just needed to go walking. Anyway, so today is March 17th, 2026, also known as St. Patrick's Day. So happy St. Patrick's Day for those of you that matters. I just want to remind everybody it's St. Patrick's Day is not named for Patrick Barrett, even though he's a pretty decent guy, I think. I guess they're all trying to drive snakes out of somewhere. So anyway, so a few things to talk about today. Not quite sure 100% where to start, but I think maybe where I would start, first off is just to mention, the passing of a good friend and a decent fellow, namely Joseph Sater. I think maybe if I can sort of call up the when I first heard about this, was in a actually in a Boston Globe article, and let me just see if I can just sort of take you over there for a moment here. Here we go. So Joseph Nabil, Joseph and Nabil Sater have been the proprietors of the Middle East. Really going back and I think until the early 1970s, but I certainly got to know Joseph probably more in the 1990s. But I have to say that the entire Seder family, which is a pretty big family, and they kind of live locally for the most part, though Joseph had actually retired down to Florida when he unfortunately passed away recently in early March. But they were in every way just like a primary anchor for Central Square. I mean, in the sense that let's come back to me now. They took care of people whenever there was, like, in the holidays, they would host parties and invite really the most in wildly diverse crowd of people, from people who you would sort of think were just sort of living off the street to people who were running businesses to city managers, city elected officials, you name it. And I always enjoyed going to these gatherings. And whenever the Middle East would host anything, they provided some of the best food buffets ever imaginable. So I'm assuming that the traditions of the Middle East will continue even without Joseph. But I have to say that many of us were incredibly saddened when we heard about his untimely passing. Really, really a jewel of a human being, always the life of the party, really. So anyway, sort of move on a little bit from there. So I'm gonna just mention just a few things that are happening around town. Before getting into some of the usual stuff around, having to do with, what goes on up at City Hall and in and around City Hall. One thing I'm going to mention here, and I'm going to again, pardon me if I being seem like I'm bouncing around here a little bit here, but one of the things that I do, some of you may or may not know this, is that I'm the webmaster publisher of the newsletter for the Middlesex Canal Association. And when we have, I think f we have a cycle of five different walks that we do up and down the length, the remnants of the old Middlesex Canal, which really existed from the late 1700s to about 1851. But there's still some water-filled sections. So I'm actually leading one section of a walk along one section where we're going to meet up, actually going to meet up at the Crowne Plaza Hotel. Over where Route 38 meets Route 128, or better known as I-95 for some of you folks here. But anyway, if somebody wants to go explore two sections of the Middlesex Canal this coming Sunday, March 22nd, starting at 1:30, come and join us. You're more than welcome. It's we'll actually have a videographer. We'll even be recording some of our wanderings. Roger Hacopian, who's actually a great videographer, who also does some of the best videos I've ever seen on the Armenian people, and about some of the histories in Watertown, and really a lot more. He actually also did a really great video recently. Actually, it's been in progress for a long time. He and I were helped work together on this, having to do with some of the history of the Boston water system. But we did a lot of sort of field trips to just do some of those recordings. So anyway, if you're interested, that's a Sunday. More than happy to have you. No need to reserve really, but there is a meetup group if you're interested in that. Another little piece of news, which has sort of been long in coming, I suppose, is I haven't seen it yet, except from a distance. But the Riverview condominiums, which was in danger of collapse, which caused the closure of Mount Auburn Street, and the city basically having to partner up with the condominium association, who were not apparently financially able to make things happen in an emergency. But anyway, the Riverview condos, which face the Charles River looking across Mount Auburn Street, apparently has been now completely demolished, pretty much on schedule. It was said that it would be done by late March, and it's sort of in March right now. I'm not quite sure when they're going to reopen Mount Auburn Street, but it wasn't open when I was there a couple days ago. So, hopefully that will happen at some point, not too far down the road. Some other things that maybe, I mean, there are many things going on around town. Maybe I'll sort of go a little bit out of sequence here and just say that recently the city council passed some rezoning for Cambridge Street. And maybe I'll speak more about that in a minute, but next or pretty soon on the in the queue is some updated zoning for Central Square, primarily to encourage housing development in and around the Central Square overlay district, though it may very well extend to being much more of a extensive rezoning for Mass Ave in a much broader sense. So I'm not quite sure what's going to happen with that. Honestly, I think most of us perhaps, would really love to see a lot of housing development within Central Square District. There's a lot of debate about it, different points of view about it. There are some who seem to, I think, naively believe that the only housing that should be built in and around Central Square should be so-called 100% affordable housing, which is really, to me, is just different for forms of public housing or government housing, or mixed use inclusionary housing, which would be, with a very high percentage of affordable units. I mean, it's a separate matter, the question that inclusionary zoning is itself under some legal jeopardy right now. We'll see how that plays out. But anyway, my own personal opinion is we just need housing development. And if you try to encumber it too much by saying it can only be for people in this income category or that income category, that's a pretty good prescription for nothing ever happening. And even if that were to happen, I think just concentrating public housing into Central Square is not really in the best long-term interests of Central Square, which has always been a thriving, or at least it once upon a time was a thriving business district. And many of us would love to see it become a thriving business district again. I mean, it's not doing horribly, but the place is absolutely filled with vacancies. And if you can get a lot more housing development coming in there, then I think that will help support some of the businesses and the commercial activities within Central Square, because it really is kind of a partnership of both residential and commercial. But I don't really know. I should know, perhaps, because I'm on the Central Square Advisory Committee, but we haven't really been getting too much of an inkling about what the proposed zoning is going to be, or if there is indeed a proposal that's coming out of the Community Development Department, because so much of what they do these days seems to be sort of cloistered, and maybe some inside players tend to know what's going on, but some of us only find out about it after the cake is fully baked. Which is not great. But anyway, we'll see. This is very certainly intertwined with the what was known as the Central Square Lots study, which isn't just in Central Square, but basically there are things like parking lots and other city assets, not the least of which includes some existing buildings like 689 Mass Ave, which is the former Citizens Bank building, where the Election Commission and some other city departments are in there. But it also has a lease arrangement with the former owner, so it's not like the city has total control over that building. But anyway, we'll see what emerges out of this. I'm looking forward to hearing what's being thought of, or whether plans are. Yeah, I mean, I have a little bit of a problem about this, as I mentioned, the pre-baking of everything here, so that we all only find out about things afterwards. And maybe even in that regard, I'll just mention here right now, it's something I actually find a bit disturbing. So, City Council did pass some zoning changes for Cambridge Street, and in December they passed the section having to do with North Mass Ave. For better or worse, we'll see what actually comes out of that. And then there was some pushback about East Cambridge and Cambridge Street from Inman Square eastward, and so they did pass something where they put certain increases in the allowable heights as of right of buildings. Maybe it wasn't as big as some of the density devils want, but anyway, there's some city council orders. We'll see where they go. Calling for into question some things to see if there should be some further modifications. And I think Community Development Department has basically been working on some of that, maybe having to do with more of the commercial ground floor retail environment. And I hope something good comes of it. But one thing that I did find a little bit disturbing, I kind of got wind of the fact that there's apparently a practice now going on with some of the people at the leadership of the Community Development Department of basically, in my view, sidestepping around open meeting laws. I mean, these should be public meetings, and the notion that you might be taking two or three city councilors at a time, basically, giving them the private tour, trying to convince multiple city councils of the wisdom of what CDD staff are coming up with here, and then taking another group of city councilors and doing the same, and then another group of city councilors doing the same, so as to not ever have a majority of the city council together at once, which would be a violation of this open meeting law. This is a practice that, I mean, we could argue this is just providing information, but again, I don't think that the Community Development Department has just been providing information recently. I think they've basically been pre-baking proposals. And if they're basically shopping around their proposals and they're doing it outside of a public meeting, and this is what Tom Riley, when he was the Attorney General, referred to as serial meetings. So instead of having five or more at a time, which would be a clear violation of open meeting law, what you do is you just take up to four, and then another up to four, and keep going around here and pretty much sell it. So that basically, when the matter comes before the public, the city council's minds have already been made up because they've been sold on something by the community development department. I don't know that that's really best practice, I mean, public process may be slow and unpredictable and maybe sometimes obstructionist here and there, but it is a public process. And I would rather see us sort of move in that direction. All right. Again, I want to kind of come back to the local here, but before I do that, let me just say a couple of things that are sort of worldwide and national scope, which again I don't usually like to do here. But there is a war going on, and sometimes I feel it's almost small, a little on the small side to be focused on local stuff when the world's sort of getting all shook up. So For those who may think I know what my opinion is about all of this, or for those who care or don't care, I hope we can prevail in this whole matter with Iran, only because I just see the entire Islamic Republic of Iran as a 47-year sore that has been nothing but problems for the entire region and the entire world. That said, as much as I would like to see a good outcome, meaning overthrowing of that regime, this whole thing scares the daylights out of me. I'm not a fan of our current president, and I don't have a lot of faith and trust that he or the people around him, often who just are yes men to the man, that they really know what they have a long-term plan. Not that you can always plan these things anyway, or they even know what they're trying to get, I mean, we did some interactions with Venezuela. Now I'm starting to wonder, was that just a prelude to basically trying to take over Cuba, which is, by the way, right now in total darkness because of complete 100% blackout right now because their energy supplies were coming from Venezuela and they're not getting it anymore. So anyway, though I hope things work out worldwide, and I hope we don't incite a bigger war with China and other countries, all because of one out of control president, Okay, I hope it all works out for the best. Maybe 5, 10 years from now, we'll all be looking back and say, well, it's a good thing we did this. At the moment, it just makes me very, very nervous. Now, it's, again, getting from the world back down to the US here, we seem to be in a little bit of a quieter phase in terms of all the immigration enforcement stuff that was leading to all sorts of terrible outcomes in places like Minnesota. But locally, there was something kind of, for me, it was sort of interesting. I think I probably alienated a few friendships on this one. But so I had got wind of the fact that there was some local people who were going to be staging a protest outside of Citizens Bank branches in and around Cambridge, in Brookline and elsewhere. And I happen to do my banking at Citizens Bank, so I happen to wander by there. Got into a bit of a heated discussion with some of the rather zealous people there who are absolutely convinced that Citizens Bank is the bad guy in all of this because apparently they are holding a loan for some party that builds and funds private prisons. At least that's the gist of what I've heard about this. So, and I was saying, like, well, sometimes a bank is just a bank, and they do business with whoever comes before them. And I don't necessarily want to have a world where everyone who comes before the bank, or even whether small parties, individual homeowners, or large corporations, that they have to basically go put through the nth degree to make sure that their politics are all clean and pure. I don't really want litmus tests like that for ordinary things like banking or many other things for that matter. But I did get a little curious about it. So when I had a meeting with my own banker, and yes, it's an investment banker, so the guy who advises me, I brought up the con I brought it up in conversation just to ask what this was really all about. And I was rather intrigued by what I learned, which is something I don't think some of the people who are in the protests, who are all well-meaning people, by the way, including some of them, I knew more than half of them, and some of them are personal friends. But apparently what happened was is that Citizens Bank acquired the assets of a company. I believe the company was called Investors Bancorp about now almost 4 years ago. And when you acquire the a bank and you basically absorb it into your own, you don't necessarily know every mortgage that they've extended anywhere. In fact, I think that there are certain privacy rules where you can't know in advance. So here's the real truth, at least as it was explained to me, is that so, yeah, Citizens Bank acquired another bank, and that other bank was the one who had extended the loans to this company that was apparently building private businesses. Now, again, what the protesters probably also don't know is that maybe in response to some of the protesters, that maybe Citizens Bank actually communicated with the mortgagee. I guess it's the mortgagee, the company with whom that loan exists, and asked if they would reconsider. You know, could they refinance it with someplace else? Because I don't think Citizens really needs the grief from all of this here. But this is a contract. A mortgage is a contract. You know, and when Citizens Bank acquires the assets and obligations of another bank, they own the paper. It's theirs. It's a contract. Citizens Bank can't just end a mortgage any more than they could just decide to foreclose on my house if I had a mortgage, which I don't, but just because they didn't like me, you know. So there has to be a legal re has to be a reason or an agreement to do that. Apparently. And again, I don't know the protesters know this, some of whom, by the way, were arrested in places like Brookline for harassing people who were just going on to do some of their banking. What they may not know is so that the person who has this mortgage, when asked, could you refinance you? They said, no, a contract is a contract. We have absolutely no intention of doing so. Citizens couldn't abrogate that agreement if they wanted to. They just can't, you know? So I sort of hope some of the people, again, well-meaning all, I just hope that they would educate themselves a little bit about some of this stuff here. And again, go on, you know, do the protests, do all you want here, but you know, educate yourself. You know, it wouldn't hurt. So, all right. So let's bring it back down to the local again, which is really where I'm a lot more comfortable, quite honestly. So this is Tuesday, March 17th. So March 16th was this Cambridge City Council meeting. It's a sort of an interesting paradox. I looked at it and I said, and I wrote it up and I sort of said, well, it's a really short agenda, you know, but my experience has been that when you have a short agenda, that doesn't necessarily translate into a short meeting. Sometimes because, you know, what will happen is one or two city councilors will say, well, this is a great opportunity for me to wax philosophical and go on and on and on about this, that, or the other thing. So, you know, again, short agenda does not always translate into short meeting, but delightfully, last night, and I did go to the meeting, it was quite short. It was, you know, I think Mark McGovern seemed to think it was like a record short meeting. But I vaguely recall there was at least one meeting years ago where Tim Toomey exercised his charter right on the entire agenda. And I believe that meeting was over almost as soon as it started. So, you know, whether this was the shortest meeting or not. But anyway, the meeting officially starts at 5:30. It almost never does start officially at 5:30, but it was over by 6:11 p.m. So it was really less than a 40, like probably more like a 40 minutes or less meeting, which was pretty good. And that includes the public comment, by the way. So I figured that's good. You know, I didn't really feel like staying there last night anyway. So now I did not go to the meeting the week before, which was March 9th, or if I did, I may have just dropped by quickly, picked up some materials and moved on. But there was some very crunchy stuff happening at that meeting. I think maybe what I'll do is I'll move around a little bit here well, let me just sort of speak to it right now first off, and just say that the you know, arguably one of the most significant things is that once again the city council, not city council, but the city of Cambridge received its AAA bond rating, which is you know, it becomes sort of a routine, right? We go, the city officials go down to New York and they, you know, have their conversations with all the rating agencies, which are, there are three principal ones that we apparently pay money to do our ratings. And for as long as I can remember, we always get the highest rating, AAA bond ratings from each, which is very good for city in terms of financing projects. I mean, there are certain things you are, maybe it's better to just do pay as you go. You know, you pay, you incorporate things into the operating budget, but sometimes like a building, a school building, or major road project and sewer projects and things like that, big capital outlays. If you have a favorable interest rate that you can get, then you it's actually works out better financially if you can just spread that cost over 10 or more years, and and take advantage of the very, very favorable interest rates because of the good bond rating. So anyway, we're AAA again from three different agencies. It was sort of interesting that Gary Mello did during public comments said, "Well, why are we paying for them? There are other bond rating agencies. Why aren't we going to seven different rating agencies? Why do we always use these three? Why do we even use three? What wouldn't one be good enough?" And I don't know. Maybe it would be. It was an I found it to be an interesting question. I had never actually thought about it that way. But so you could make a case. Maybe we don't really need to do that. But anyway, that was something that was part of what was going on there. I think maybe what I'll do is I'm just going to just switch over here just to help remind myself of some of the items that were on the agenda of that meeting here. There was a every year. Because of Cambridge has a surveillance ordinance, they have to issue a surveillance report. Which is, I find it's interesting on the one hand, but also kind of ridiculous on the other hand. To sort of have every single department, giving a report on everything of the every possible use of things that could loosely be called surveillance. It always reminds me of the time some years ago when, I think it was from, just from when there's an emergency, and sometimes they have to, as part of a emergency medical situation, they have to use a laryngoscope. And then when they were talking about that, because it's a camera that you use for sort of shoving it down the throat of somebody or down the larynx of somebody, in order to, check for obstructions or what have you. And during that time, former or then City Councilor Zondervan raised the issue about whether that laryngoscope might inadvertently record an individual. And so now, ever since then, whenever the comparable report comes in, there's a reference to the laryngoscopes and how nobody was filmed during the emergency event. So anyway, it's quite interesting. I think I'll sort of step back out of this here now. So